We'll introduce Brother David Christensen from Seattle, who will speak to us concerning the Feast of Tabernacles. Brother David.
The Feast of Tabernacles is in two parts because there are two reasons why God set it up as a feast for the Israelites. It was almost like two feasts put into the same time slot. And this is why the Feast of Tabernacles is called also the Feast of Ingathering. Now, the Hebrew word translated tabernacles is Strong's number 5521, and it means hut or lair. And although similar, it is a different word than words used for the tabernacle. The first mention of this feast is in Exodus 23:16, which says, "And the Feast of Ingathering, which is in the end of the year, when thou hast gathered in thy labors out of the field." And the word ingathering means exactly what it suggests, the gathering in of something, which, in this case, is their labors out of the field, their crops. We also learn from Leviticus 23:29 that this feast was to start on the 15th day of the 7th month, which is often referred to by the non-biblical name Tishri. By the 15th of Tishri, which corresponds to our September-October, right in that area, all the major crops had not only been harvested, but processed pretty much as well. The last of the crops, grapes, figs, and olives, were processed in the 6th Jewish month. The Feast of Ingathering was to praise the Lord for the entire year's harvest after it was complete. The other feast that is in the same time slot, so to speak, is the Feast of Tabernacles or Feast of Booths. And this part of the feast was for a very different reason. Let's read Leviticus 23:43. "That your generations may know that I made the children of Israel to dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God." Excuse me. This is similar to the Feast of the Passover, in that it is a remembrance of something that God did for them in the past. The two feasts are shown combined in Leviticus 23:39-42. "Also, when the 15th day of the 7th month, when ye have gathered in the fruit of the land, ye shall keep a feast unto the Lord 7 days. And this would be the Feast of Ingathering. On the first day shall be a Sabbath, and on the 8th day shall be a Sabbath. And ye shall take you on the first day the boughs of goodly trees, branches of palm trees, and the boughs of thick trees, and willows of the brook, and ye shall rejoice before the Lord your God 7 days. And you shall keep it a feast unto the Lord 7 days in the year. It shall be a statute forever in your generations. Ye shall celebrate it in the 7th month. Ye shall dwell in booths 7 days. All that are Israelites born shall dwell in booths." And this is the Feast of Tabernacles, or the Feast of Booths. And they are also linked in Deuteronomy 16:13-15. But what we're going to do now is take a look at the entire feast from three different perspectives. Number one, what it meant or was supposed to mean to the Israelites as they celebrated. In other words, what was the original point of having this feast? Number two, what are some spiritual lessons we can get from these feasts? And number three, is there any prophetic significance, or are there pictures of future events shown that we can discern from the various aspects of this feast? The Feast of Ingathering was supposed to be a feast of rejoicing for the bounty of the land provided by God and the sweat of their collective brows. The celebration of the ingathering was supposed to keep the Israelites focused on God, to be thankful to Him for looking after their needs. And this was much the same as the Feast of the Harvest, where they offered up the first fruits of the harvest. Seems like the Lord was always trying to help them be more thankful. And as we know, He wasn't always successful. To help them stay focused, they were told in Numbers 29:12, "Do no servile work." In other words, work-wise, they were to keep this feast similar to a Sabbath day. The word work in this text is Strong's number 4399, and it means seems to mean more often used, it's used as an occupation or an employment of others. And they were supposed to get completely away from the grind of the everyday work and focus on the Lord and His goodness. We do learn, though, in Leviticus 23:40 that there was work to be done. They were instructed on that first day that they should gather certain materials together to make their booths or individual tabernacles for each man to dwell in for the week. In Deuteronomy 16:14, the Israelites were instructed to rejoice in thy feast. And they should rejoice for the two reasons mentioned earlier, because the Lord had led them out of Egypt and because of the year's harvest that will sustain them until the following harvest. Now, there almost seems to be a contradiction in verse 15 of Deuteronomy 16. It says they should keep a solemn feast. And in our language, rejoicing and being solemn are usually exact opposites. However, the Hebrew word for "thou shalt keep a solemn feast" means, according to Professor Strong, to move in a circle. That is, to march in a sacred procession, to observe a festival, by implication, to be giddy. And it's actually translated dancing in 1 Samuel 30, verse 16. This was indeed a feast of celebration and rejoicing. It was also a feast of sacrifices. Numbers 29, 12 through 34 gives a list of all the sacrifices that were to be made that week. It's a very long list, and I'm not going to read the entire list. No thanks necessary. As you can see, there were several sacrifices every day. There were bullocks, rams, lambs of the first year, and a kid of the goats, and that was besides the continual burnt offering, the meat offering, and their drink offering. And we'll note one last thing before we move on to spiritual applications. Deuteronomy 16:16 says that only the males would participate in this feast. And the commentaries I read on this subject, they indicate that each male would represent the rest of the family left behind, and that it would have been a hardship for the women to pack up, travel many miles, and live in a little booth for a week. Even though the men could leave their jobs for a week, the women still had the responsibility of taking care of the children. The small and unborn children would have been especially difficult to manage. However, the women and the children were not excluded from the rejoicing. Verse 14 tells us that all would rejoice. And thou shalt rejoice in thy feast, thou and thy son and thy daughter and thy manservant and thy maidservant and the Levite and the stranger and the fatherless and the widow that are within thy gates. Everyone was to rejoice in their own station. And in a nutshell, that was what the Israelites did at the Feast of Tabernacles. And we just don't have time to go into any more detail. But what do all these facets of the Feast of Tabernacles mean to spiritual Israel? Are there lessons in this feast for us? Well, I'm going to share with you some suggestions of Pastor Russell, found in reprint 3677, and I think he said it very nicely. Quote, "Our general three-day conventions are somewhat after this Feast of Tabernacles pattern, only on a higher plane, adapted to us as spiritual Israelites. We do not live in tents and booths, yet our absence from our regular homes for a few days implies temporary dwelling places or tabernacles. We are absent for a time from some of the conveniences and comforts of our homes, yet these conditions may be very favorable to us as reminders that here we have no continuing city, that we are not to set our hearts upon houses or lands or any earthly thing, but to remember that our citizenship is in heaven and that our present sojourn is toward the heavenly Jerusalem, the kingdom, and that everything in the present time should be considered by us as a temporal or tabernacle condition, waiting for the eternal conditions which God has promised us." My goodness, what can I add to that? But Brother Russell continues, "The whole people, for a time at least, were on a common level, It was not a feast of sensuality nor an occasion for moral abandon, but quite to the contrary, was a time for reading of the book of the law and the expounding of it. And this also corresponds well with our conventions in which Bible study has the chief place and chief interest. Surely we do have spiritual refreshing, feasting surely at these gatherings, these spiritual feasts in temporary tabernacles away from our usual homes are proving very helpful to the Lord's people, end quote. I just think that's a beautiful point. You know, when we go back to our several homes, we will all go to very different places. Some of us live in very nice homes, and others of us live in very moderate dwellings. Some own, some rent. But you know, when we are here, we all pretty much live in similar booths for the week. We see each other as God sees us, as new creatures in Christ. And I know we always do that. But here there is no distraction from whatever worldly differences might exist among us. Tonight we want to also take a look at the Feast of Tabernacles as prophecy, or the foreshadowing of future events, if you will. And we think that the Feast of Tabernacles pictures the kingdom in many ways. First, note that this feast happened each year 5 days after the Atonement Day sacrifices. Now, Brother Russell taught us that the Atonement Day sacrifices every year on the 10th day of the 7th month represented the sacrifices of Christ and His church in the Gospel Age, and we agree. So, sometime very soon after the Gospel Age is finished and the church's sacrifices are complete, there will be a time when the Feast of Tabernacles will take place on a grander scale. And I'm purposely not using the word types and antitype here because I don't know that this is a type. However, I think there are so many similarities between the original feast and what we know will happen at certain times in the kingdom that the picture warrants a little examination so as to solidify our faith. So let's take a look at some more of the similarities. The Feast of Ingathering was a celebration of the entire year's harvest after it was complete. When the Gospel Age harvests are complete, how much rejoicing will there be from the world when they learn that the Lord's elect were harvested for them? What an occasion to celebrate when the world finally understands 1 Corinthians 15:29. Else what shall they do which are baptized for the dead, if the dead rise not at all? The world by that time will have started receiving the benefits of the ransom sacrifice as well as the sin offering. Again, Deuteronomy 16:14 says about the Feast of Tabernacles, "And thou shalt rejoice in thy feast, thou and thy son and thy daughter and thy manservant and thy maidservant and the Levite and the stranger and the fatherless and the widow that are within thy gates." It will not be just the males of fleshly Israel rejoicing over the harvest in the kingdom. It will be everyone. The Feast of Tabernacles was called just that because the men who went to the feast built and stayed in small booths or tabernacles. And that sort of reminds me of Isaiah 65:22. "They shall not build and another inhabit." That's what Isaiah said about the kingdom. That's the way it was at the Feast of Tabernacles. Now, there were many sacrifices during the week. And as we look at Numbers 29:13-34, we see multiple animal sacrifices daily during the feast. And if you follow the text down from verse 13, you will find that the number of bullocks sacrificed is one less each day until the last day, when there are 7 bullocks sacrificed on that 7th day. The number of the other sacrifices remains the same each day. And we don't have time to explore these in depth, but I have a few ideas for you. For thousands of years, Israel has been involved in sacrifices and feasts and ceremonies that God has asked them to do. But they have not understood the greater meanings of the animal sacrifices. Israel does not understand, for example, that the bullock sacrificed on the Day of Atonement represented Jesus, or that the lamb in Exodus 12 represented Jesus. Nor could they understand that those sacrifices could never bring the comers thereunto to perfection, but were types and shadows for us. How could they possibly understand that? Perhaps these various sacrifices of the Feast of Tabernacles will help fleshly Israel remember all of God's goodness and long-suffering with them when they learn the full story in the kingdom. Perhaps learning about their whole way of life as God's chosen people will help them fully understand the greater sacrifices of Jesus and his bride. If you add up the numbers of bullocks sacrificed in the Feast of Tabernacles, you will see that it adds up to 70. And since this Feast of Tabernacles was a remembrance time, maybe the 70 bullocks will remind them of other events in their past. Maybe they will reflect on Jacob when he went down to Egypt. 70 souls made the trip. Perhaps this will remind them of their humble beginnings. Maybe they will remember the 70 elders who waited for Moses to receive the commandments of the Lord. Perhaps they will remember that they said in one voice, "We will do." Perhaps they will look back and realize, "We did not." And maybe they will remember their 70 years in captivity to Babylon because they did not keep the Sabbath years. Maybe they will remember the 70 weeks of Daniel 9 and realize that their Messiah was in their very midst. And when he was cut off in the middle of the last week, it was Israel who cried, "Crucify him." As the New Testament opens up to them, perhaps they will learn that what Jesus said in Matthew 18:21 and 22, they should take to heart. Forgive 70 times 7. When we look at how the Jews have been treated down through history, they will certainly have to learn forgiveness. Remembering their past mistakes and their failures to follow God's law will help to humble them enough to forgive their past enemies. This will also help them to accept the Lord's forgiveness of them. And maybe they will see the significance of the last day of the feast. 7 bullocks were sacrificed. We believe that the number 7 signifies perfect or complete. 1 Corinthians 13:10 says, "But when that which is perfect is come, then that which is in part shall be done away." Blindness in part will be done away with, and they will indeed recognize Jesus as their perfect Messiah. The 2 rams sacrificed each day might bring their minds back to the tabernacle arrangement and especially the Atonement Day sacrifices. They will come to understand that the burnt offerings of the 2 rams after the sacrificing was complete on the Atonement Day, found in Leviticus 16:3, 5, and 24, represents God's acceptance of the sacrifices, as Pastor Russell taught us in Tabernacle Shadows, page 73. Israel will truly learn that all their animal sacrifices, even though they were accepted by God, could not bring perfection. But the sacrifices of Christ and his church were also accepted of God and will lead to perfection of mankind. There's one more text that seems to point strongly to a grander Feast of Tabernacles in the kingdom. Zechariah 14:16-19 reads this way, "And it shall come to pass that everyone that is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem shall even go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And it shall be that whoso will not come up of all the families of the earth unto Jerusalem to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, even upon them shall be no rain. And if the family of Egypt go not up and come not that have no rain, there shall be the plague, wherewith the Lord will smite the heathen that come not up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. This shall be the punishment of Egypt and the punishment of all nations that come not up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. Just think for a moment of how miraculous that will be in the kingdom. In the kingdom, all the nations of the earth, especially those who have come up against Israel, will worship the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And they will keep the Feast of Tabernacles with Israel. This will be so important that those who do not keep this feast with Israel, they will be punished. And I think that sounds a little bit like Zechariah 8:23. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, in those days it shall come to pass that 10 men shall take hold out of all languages of the nations, even shall take hold of the skirt of him that is a Jew, saying, we will go with you, for we have heard that God is with you. How much rejoicing and celebrating we anticipate from fleshly Israel when they recognize and celebrate the greater Feast of Tabernacles in the kingdom, and the rest of the world will celebrate with them. And may the Lord add his blessing.